Mets fans, I want to take a quick break from talking baseball and let you know about the next top prospect in building a smart home. Eufy Video Smart Lock E330 is that big-time new star prospect. The Eufy Video Smart Lock E330 is a smart lock, a 2K resolution camera, and a doorbell. It's three devices in one, triple the security. You know triples are rare in baseball, but not with Eufy. You can have everything in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but also for convenience. Just the other night, I had tons of packages in the rain. Rather than fumble for my keys, I easily entered my home. This is big since I have four dogs who are impatiently waiting for me at the door. No more concerns about losing keys, and you could assign passwords to your family members. Worried about when your loved ones are getting home? Eufy allows you to see them coming back home via the integrated camera. Hey, Mets fans, this is a home run. I had a competitive product before Eufy, and it's the difference between a one-dimensional hitter and a five-tool player. Eufy is that five-tool superstar. Go to eufy.com, that's EUFY.com to learn more. Already sold? Go to Amazon and get your Eufy Video Smart Lock E330 today. Want to go to the store? Best Buy will have it starting around May 20th. Get complete control over your front door at ease with the Eufy Video Smart Lock E330 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, May the 14th, 2018. Of course, you can check out the show all the time over at our friends at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Hope everybody's doing well. Day late, not a dollar short with this podcast. Hope you enjoyed. If you have had a chance, my appearance on WLIE 540 AM, I was guest co-hosting with Justin Walters of Verizon Fios, and Rich Catino was on assignment down in Philadelphia. So when I don't do a podcast, I mean, I always do a podcast every week. That's the goal here, especially during the baseball season. Sometimes during the off season, we'll skip a week here or there, depending on what's going on, but always during the season. I will put all my WLIE or any other appearance on the podcast feed. If you want to listen, great. If not, so be it. But I thought that was a fun show and hope you enjoyed it. Decided to do today because of the day off, see what kind of news came out. Not much going on, but interesting story from Dave Island and some of his comments on Noah Syndergaard. So I'll get to that in just a minute. We'll talk about Mickey Callaway and where he stands now that we're 6 weeks in. Some grumblings from the fan base. And we'll put a final ode to Matt Harvey here and talk a little bit about that as that trade went down since the last time I was on the air. So it's been about a week or so since all that happened. So we'll take it from there. But anyway, hope everybody had a good Mother's Day weekend. And, you know, Mets, look, this is the same story we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks here. It's basically, you know, the 8-18 Mets, and then there's the 11-1 Mets. And when you came, you know, when you come down to it, you're basically around 500. That's what this team has been, around 500, 2 to 3 games out, depending on which team you're looking at. You know, we'll see how real the Braves and the Phillies are. The Nationals just came off a great sweep of the Diamondbacks, who've been hot, and they come to Citi Field later this week. It's really time for the Mets to kick it into gear. I mean, this homestand, I don't want to say it's critical, but you can't have another 1-7, 2-6 on this 8-game homestand. You got to kick it into gear. You got Toronto, you got Miami, you've got Diamondbacks. That's going to be tough. Playing the American League teams, that's always tough. Those interleague games, they're always kind of toss-ups, and then you get the Marlins, who, listen, I don't want to hear about, well, the Mets haven't played the Marlins. The Marlins are patsies. They're a major league team, and those teams give you a hell of a hard time sometimes. Ask the Mets throughout their history. They've had some hard times against some bad teams, especially in September. Look at 2007. The Nats, the Marlins, they gave them a hell of a time. Those were not great teams. Those were bad teams that they were playing. So, important eight-game homestand. It was funny because after Mickey Callaway allowed Paul Sewald to pitch to Nick Williams yesterday in, what was it, the sixth inning? Yeah, it was the sixth. It was the sixth inning. After they allowed, I mean, the fans were just lighting him up on Twitter. Just lighting him up on Twitter. And, you know, I looked at it and I said, all right, let me see. Is this, because I said, I should have went with the lefty. That was my first reaction. Should have went with the lefty. And that's a fair first reaction. But then I kind of went to his splits and I said, well, he's not exactly lighting up this year, lefty or righty. And for his career, there hasn't been any extreme splits either way. And then you had Cesar Hernandez on deck, who really hits lefties well at a very high rate. So if Blevins walked or couldn't get Williams out, you're going to probably have to switch and bring in another arm. So it really made a lot of sense to stick with Sewald, who's been good this year, much better against lefties than he was last year. And he didn't execute. So, you know, I saw one fan say, well, the Mets need to fire Callaway immediately and bring in Joe Girardi. Well, you know, and the Yankee fans didn't love Girardi all the time throughout his tenure. Well, let's remember that. Girardi was there 10 years almost, and there wasn't a love fest with Girardi at various points. But I would say this about Callaway. I know that you guys are expecting – every game is going to be a referendum on Callaway going forward. That's the way it is in this town now. But when you really look at the whole situation here, 6 weeks in, guys had a pitching staff that has struggled at times to go five innings. His two aces, DeGrom and Syndergaard, he's really been one and a half aces because Syndergaard hasn't been great. We'll get to that a little bit with Dave Island's comments. Matt's is starting to grind out some games, but he's been league average. Wheeler's been below league average. And once every 5 days, you've got a horrible start from Harvey, horrible start from Vargas. I mean, not even competitive starts at times. So he's been dealing with a lot. Bullpen's been overworked, but I thought he's managed it pretty well. He's been creative at times and maybe a little different, but he's managed it pretty well. And you've had players in and out of the lineup, and they haven't even been that great. Conforto's been bad before his big hit on Friday. Bruce has been bad at times. Cespedes is on one leg, and he was slumping early on. I mean, you really have only had consistency out of Astrubal Cabrera. Frazier's been pretty good. Now he's hurt. The shortstop has been in, not hitting at all. Catcher has been pitcher-level performance with the bat. Now you got Mesoraco. Let's see what happens there. First base has been up and down. Defensively, they've been okay. You know, this is not exactly a complete team or a team that's firing on all cylinders. And for them to be above 500, and now this is where the rubber's going to meet the road, that old saying. Let's see if this team is different than prior years, because in prior years in the Collins, this would just start to slip. Last year, this would start to slip. And I know they came back in 2016, but that was against a pretty mediocre schedule late in the year. And they have not really, this team has not kicked themselves into gear since 2015. It's been a long time. That's very far in the rearview mirror. So to me, now is the time to see what this team is made of. Yes, it's going to depend on the players, but let's see. You know, can Callaway get these guys going? Can they continue to play hard for him? Can they continue to buy into? I mean, they're all talking the right talk about playing together, accepting their roles. They all want to win. They all want to compete. They all want to be in the playoffs. Because at the end of the day, it's about making the tournament here. Yeah, you want to win a division and put yourself in a good position when you get in that tournament. But you get in, you're dangerous. It doesn't matter who you are. And that's what that's about. And there's no reason why this team can't be in that tournament. I'm sorry. You can't convince me otherwise that this team is not good enough to make the playoffs. Just can't. With all the nonsense that's gone on, they're still over 500. It could be a lot worse. Could be better, but it could be a lot worse. For a team that's not firing on all cylinders, just go to Baseball Reference. Look at the historical performances of a lot of these hitters. They're not even close. And Callaway's got them right there. So let's just back off on the Callaway hate. Let's not make every game a referendum on Callaway. And look, every manager is going to make decisions that you're not going to agree with. If you thought when they eliminated Terry Collins from the Mets lexicon that you weren't ever going to complain about a manager's bullpen manager, which, by the way, he doesn't really bother me most of what he's done, you're crazy. You're crazy. You don't think that they'd ever complain about the lineup? You're crazy. So, you know, to me, Mickey Callaway has been just fine. Let's see. Let's continue. I'm not sold either way. I'm not saying he's the greatest manager ever. I'm not saying I'm still evaluating him, but he hasn't annoyed me yet. And by no means do I think that he's a negative on this team. After 7 years where the manager was one of the weakest links on the team in the dugout, every game, no matter who you played, you probably were on the wrong end on the managerial side. To me, you can't go crazy 6 weeks in with a new guy here in the dugout. So that's where I am with Callaway. Big homestand coming up. Let's take a quick break. When I return, Dave Island had some interesting things to say about Noah Syndergaard and the starting rotation. Spoke to Mike Puma earlier today, and I have some thoughts on that. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, May the 14th. Check out the show all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. We'll be back with more Talking Mets podcast right after this.
In the air to right field. Wow, that is gone! Off the base of the scoreboard! Nick Williams pops off the bench yet again! A three-run home run, and the Phillies take the lead.
Good timing. There you go. There's your hit with men in scoring position and two out.
Oh, hopefully that'll give Arenado a chance to get that W.
Man, a little slider low and away, kind of a backdoor slider.
And that was way out of here.
It begs the question is why is Blevins not in, but the Phillies are happy about it.
We're back, and forgot to kind of mention there in the open, Matt Eholt of The Record will join us in just a little bit. So Matt Eholt will join us, and we'll have some fun with him, waiting on him in a few, and we'll have a chance to see what his thoughts are about Mickey Callaway and where the Mets are. Dave Island, I had said, had some comments regarding Noah Syndergaard and the Mets rotation, and here were some interesting things that Puma have put out there, just to put things into context. Not making excuses, not being apologetic, just putting things into context. The Mets have posted a 4.16 ERA. If you take Vargas out, pitchers not named Vargas have pitched to a 3.79 ERA. In this day and age, that's not bad. Not bad at all. Not as good as what they were a couple of years ago, but not bad at all. The bullpen has pitched to a 3.90 ERA. That's not bad either. And I know that Island was quoted as saying, we're not breaking it up that way. It's about getting 27 outs. But overall, Vargas has been bad. And I bet you take Harvey's numbers out of there, it's that much better. I mean, Harvey and Vargas are not even this league. I mean, these are, you could get anybody, forget the name on the back, anybody to pitch better than that. Now, in the column with Puma, Island seems to believe that Vargas will be okay because he's seen him pitch before. In the American League West, he pitched for him in Kansas City, saw him with Seattle. So he doesn't seem concerned. We'll see. You have to believe that the injury, the hammock bone that was broken and how that interrupted spring training, and then he had to continue to keep himself in shape by pitching behind a screen, messed with his mechanics. It's kind of a horrible start and go. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt for now. But right now, he's not competitive, so you have to be – I have no problem with them skipping him in the rotation. And, you know, the Mets need to be honest with themselves and say, hey, this guy needs to start performing quick. So I wouldn't pull the plug on him like some people want to, but, you know, that's where you're at. But the interesting quote, and I really actually liked Island and how he said this, because to me, this is what has been missing from this team for so long, about just calling people out and telling it like it is. And here, I'll read the actual quotes from the story. So Puma writes at the New York Post. You can get it at nypost.com or when you pick up your paper in the morning. Noah Syndergaard may have a big career upside, but his Mets pitching coach bristles at the notion the fireballing right-hander is underperforming in a season he was expected by many to produce Cy Young caliber numbers. I just don't know where the expectations come from, Ireland told the Post. He spent, what, 2.5 years in the big leagues? So I don't know where all the expectations came from. I wasn't here for all that, but he has yet to do a whole lot at the major league level. Now, is he capable of it? Yeah. But he's 25 years old. For the most part, every game he's kept us in and has given us a chance to win. So, I mean, here's a guy, Ireland. He saw Syndergaard pitch against them in Game 3 of the World Series. Obviously, that whole throwing behind the head of Alcides Escobar and all that, with that sparked. But, you know, I feel exactly the same way. I never was in the camp of this five aces, and you got to prove that. You got to earn that. Now, there's their potential, sure. I love Steven Matz, but he hasn't proven that he can consistently be anything better than a league average pitcher. That's what he is now. And there's value to that, but that's not an ace. Same thing with Zach Wheeler. I'm not as high on Wheeler as others have been since he was acquired for Carlos Beltran, but he's got value. And to me, Syndergaard has shown flashes of dominance, but you're right. He was out most of all last year. He's not been great so far this year. He was really good in 2016. He was really good in the wild card play-in game. He was pretty good in the playoffs. He pitched really well against the Cubs. Came in relief against the Dodgers. Pitched okay in Game 2 against the Dodgers, but his big contribution, in my opinion, was that one inning of relief in Game 5. And he pitched pretty good in the World Series. So he's done some really nice things, and I think this entire staff and as a whole has suffered from the fact that during that 2015 innocent climb, during that run to the World Series, they pretty much went above and beyond what you would have expected out of them that year. And now they're always going to have to live up to that and then some. And that's life. So I'm not feeling sorry for them. But to me, Ireland basically telling Syndergaard, you're nothing special. And I know the fans, oh, my God, how can he say that? Oh, you know, Noah's going to be mad. Well, who cares? You know, all due respect to Noah Syndergaard. You know, I know he does all the goofy stuff on Twitter, the feud with Mr. Met, the Thor moniker. You know what? Just pitch, man. What I love about Jacob deGrom, there's no cartoon characters. There's no flair. There's no Twitter. All it is, he goes out there and competes and wins or tries to win. Even yesterday, here's a guy who had El Zippo in the first inning, got through it with 45 pitches, no runs. Got some key outs to keep them in the ballgame. He could have pitched one inning and got the doors blown off of him, but he didn't. That's exactly what he did in Game 5 of the NLDS. So to me, I like this. I like the fact that Ireland's doing this because he's sending a message. You're just one of the guys. You're keeping us in games. But that's not something above and beyond. That's what I would expect of any pitcher. And if Noah Syndergaard's going to consider himself quote-unquote great, six innings, two runs, six innings, three runs is not great. Going seven, getting into the eighth. Occasionally throw me a complete game. I know that's a different story. I'm not going to kill him for that. But getting into the seventh inning, consistently getting into the seventh, eighth inning, that's the kind of stuff that great pitchers do. See how Max Scherzer all the time going deep into games. That's what you want to see out of a great pitcher. That's what I believe DeGrom is on the precipice of doing, and I don't know if Syndergaard's quite at the same level right now, but that's what you need out of Syndergaard as well. So no issues with those comments. Like it, like what he has to say. So let's take a quick break. When we return, I'll talk about the Matt Harvey deal, final thoughts on that. Remember, Matty Holt of The Record will be joining me in just a few. We'll get his thoughts on all this. Noah Syndergaard, the rotation, Mickey Callaway. And actually, there's some rumblings out there. The Mets might be looking at another former Met to come back. No, they're not trying to reacquire Matt Harvey. They're looking at somebody else that you probably remember. Let's take a quick break. When we return, we'll be back with more Talking Mets podcast right after this.
Yeah, you know what? It was just an administrative thing that I didn't take care of. You know, I got to double check, triple check, and quadruple check, you know, what's put on there and what's put on the board.
Are you the one who normally does the card, or does Gary do it?
I'm responsible for it.
What was your reaction when that happened?
No, I knew right when they went up there that it was, you know, that we get out of order.
How exactly did it happen in terms of filling out a lineup card that's turned into the ump versus?
One's handwritten and the other is printed out on a computer.
Did you know before they went out there that you had the wrong guy for an order, or was it something when you saw him come out back?
No, when he went up to the plate, yeah. And then you can't, once they announce you, can't do anything.
So Was it just mistranscribed, or just that was something that had been there and you changed it, or?
It was just what was put in the computer was wrong.
In that second inning, were they confused as to who was supposed to be batting, whether it was Bruce or Gonzalez?
Yeah. Once Bruce has been announced, he makes the last out, and then you move on to the next player.
So the lineup you wanted was the one...
He could have called it earlier.
So the lineup you wanted was the one you turned in?
Yes.
How just frustrating is that as a manager to have...
No, it's frustrating. It probably cost us a game. We had a chance to score in the first, and we didn't.
We're back. Mike Silva, Talking Mets podcast here. So, Devin Mesoraco from Matt Harvey. I'm not going to get too much into it. Problem for a problem. It was funny when I heard that the Reds were the team that looked to be closing in on Harvey. I said, oh, Devin Mesoraco, that's interesting, because he had that good season about 3 years ago. We hit over 20 home runs. He had that big home run on Friday to give the Mets a little bit of a cushion against the Phillies. But look, I don't know what Mesoraco is going to do. He's better than Nitto at this point. Thomas Nitto has been very disappointing at the big league level. He's clearly not ready. He's definitely better than Jose Lobatone. I think when Plawecki comes back, they could find some kind of share time there. I think the Mets should continue to look at that position and see what they can get done. I don't know if Mesoraco is a long-term play here, but he's better than what they've had. And I know that there's some questions on his defense, but we'll see how that all turns out. So to me, that's that. I know you're all getting crazy about Harvey pitching 4 scoreless innings. I'm not. It's not. If you and I didn't see the game, but I was reading about it, and I was looking a little bit at the process stats. He's still a lot of contact. I think it was like 2 swings and misses during the game. So to me, don't get crazy. I don't want you to pay attention to Matt Harvey. That's not the focus right now. They did the right thing. Harvey had to, and I said this on WLAE. I've said this when I was on the Carolina Sports Network when they were interviewing me before the Braves series. Going to another team out of the limelight, rediscovering the new Matt Harvey, who doesn't have to be the Dark Knight, that is what he needed, and he got that. So, that's the deal. Hey, so there's some report that the Mets might be taking a look at. I don't know if it's the Mets, but from the Rising Apple, it says the Mets are romancing the idea of bringing Bartolo Colon back. So here's the thing. I was all in favor of the Mets bringing Colon back on a minor league deal, and they seemed against it. Colon has pitched pretty well in Texas, and that's the American League. And even last year, after he left Atlanta, he was just bad in Atlanta. I mean, to me, Colon is a pitcher that needs to be in a winning energy environment. He wasn't horrible with the Twins. He was better. And he got off to a tough start, and then he seemed to improve. But so far this year, he's started 6 games. He's got an ERA of 3.32. He's 1-1 for the Rangers. I don't expect that to continue. But, I mean, his peripherals with the Minnesota Twins, the walk rate's back to being low like it always is. The strikeout rate is 5-6 per 9 innings. This big issue, it seemed like, with the Braves last year was the walks were up. The walks were way up, more than he's ever had in, since prior to when he had the surgeries back in 2007, 2008. So Colon, to me, had a command issue for whatever reason. And then he left Atlanta and he seemed to rediscover it. And he's pitching in the American League. He doesn't have the benefit of pitching to the pitcher spot. So look, if the idea is to bring him back, I wouldn't give the Rangers much. Can he be worse than what they've gotten at times? No. And I think they need the depth in the starting rotation. And I really don't know if I want to pull Lugo or Gazelman out of the bullpen, because even with someone like Colon coming back, you don't know how many innings he's going to give you. Right now it looks like the Mets want guys to go through the lineup twice, and then they want to go to the bullpen. They've said that in the offseason, and they're playing that out. Now, I think with DeGrom and Syndergaard, they should be pushed to do more, but, we'll see. They have to prove it as well. So to me, that's an interesting – I'm all for that. I'm fine with that move, and – and we'll take it from there. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we return, Matt Eholt of The Record will be joining us. Let's hear his thoughts on everything. Mickey Callaway, Dave Island's comments. And he also had a chance to take a look at Ahmed Rosario's stats after 81 games. So we'll hear what his thoughts are on Rosario. Should the Mets maybe send Rosario down, put Reyes at the position? We'll see what he has to think about that. So we'll be back with Matt Eholt on the Talking Mets podcast right after this.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have success, especially against, you know, a good team like the Dodgers, you know, it's a good first start. Obviously, it's only four innings. There's a lot of work and a lot of season left, but I think to go out there and be successful and get outs and help the team win is very important. I think, you know, the long layoff, you know, definitely a little different from what I'm used to, but it was good to get on a five-day rotation and at least kind of feel that way the last week. I kind of treated it like that. I knew I was going to possibly start this weekend, so I wanted to kind of get back into that routine while I was working out at the Morris place this past week. So it was good. It was fun.
We're back, and joining us from The Record, Matt Eholt. He's the beat reporter for the Mets, and we've had him on a ton of times. And on this day off, he's been kind enough to spend a couple of minutes. Matt, welcome back. And you've had an 8-18 team and a team that's been 11-1, eight-game homestand coming up. Where do you – I mean, obviously you're not feeling great about this team, but it's really time, I would think, this eight-game homestand. If they're going to kick it into gear this month, be a nice time to do so.
Yeah, certainly, to kind of, you know, the bad vibes that are kind of surrounding the team right now, to kind of put those in the rear view. And also, especially, I just think there's something – if they fall back to 500, there's just something about that that really is going to leave a bad stench around this team, that, you know, you're 11-1 and then to fall to 500. I mean, you basically will have, you know, remember all those stats, everybody, you know, myself included, we put out there early on saying, oh, you know, all the Mets got to do is play 500 ball and they win. I forget what it was, however many games, or sorry, 86 games. Like then at that point, it will be, well, you have to play 500 ball the rest of the year just to go 500. So, you know, they need to start showing some signs, because right now, you know, the Mets are not a team that I think you want to buy stock in at the moment.
No, that's for sure. And the fact that the Yankees are playing so well, I think, ties into it. It makes things even look that much worse. But let's get to the manager, Mickey Callaway. He made a decision yesterday that was curious at first with allowing Paul Sewell to pitch to Nick Williams. I wasn't upset with his explanation, and if you break down, you know, with Hernandez on deck hitting lefties and Williams, you know, hitting lefties okay, it's not the worst decision in the world. But what it did bring out, and I know it's just the fans, is you started to see the first hits in the armor, so to speak, with discontent from the fans. I mean, I even saw one silly poster talk about firing Callaway and bringing Girardi on. You knew that was going to come eventually. Look, Callaway could do no wrong through 12 games. I mean, the culture, all this. Now you're starting to see some questionable moves. Overall, with what he's been faced, starting rotation that's been uneven, overworked bullpen, offense that at times has been non-existent, guys in and out of the lineup. Now you got Cespedes on one leg. I don't think he's done an awful job. I know it's a learning curve with the lineup situation and the lineup card, but I don't think he's done a terrible job through 6 weeks.
No, he hasn't. You know, he's made some questionable bullpen moves. I'll be honest, some of the ways he handles the bullpen, sometimes I look at it and I'm not sure exactly what I don't understand the exact, when I say don't understand, I guess I should say I disagree with sometimes some of the way he pulls guys rather quickly. But no, I mean, he's a first-time manager navigating his way through a bullpen. And, you know, there's going to be hiccups along the way. I mean, you saw it yesterday. I mean, Callaway is not going to outright say it, but you watch yesterday's game. I mean, all you had to do to watch that game was just, it was clear he just doesn't trust Jerry Blevins at the moment. Like, because if Jerry Blevins got lefties out, you put him in that game, because who says the Mets don't score five runs in the bottom of the inning and then it's a blowout. So you always have to, you know, you go for the win when you can win it. You know, obviously the trust in Blevins is not there at the moment. So, but no, I mean, his bullpen management, you know, it's been okay. I don't think it's been great. I don't think it's been bad. You know, they talked a lot about they were going to really not have a closer. That hasn't come to fruition. There's really only been one or twice where they've made a move and it's been like, oh, okay, that's an aggressive move. That's like a progressive thinking. But, you know, overall, I think, you know, ultimately a lot of this stuff falls to the players. You know, the players make the manager look good or they make them look bad. And that was the case no matter who the manager was. I know you're not a big fan of the Terry Collins regime, but ultimately the players, you know, ultimately make the manager look good or bad.
No, that's fair. I totally get that. Matty Holt of the Record joining us, talking a little bit about the Mets here on this day off. Yoenis Cespedes, to some degree, there are those that believe that the team is playing a little roulette with him again. He looked gimpy out there this weekend in Philadelphia. You know, he says it's not the same. He's 85%. You do like him grinding it out. I know that that's a big thing. It may be a big thing for Cespedes because there's always been maybe some talk about how much he put into last year or how quickly he shut it down. But you know, I'm starting to look at it. Would it be the worst thing? I know they've done this before. You don't play him the next couple of games. I know you'll be shorthanded. See how he is on Thursday. And then if he's not better on Thursday, DL him. You could backdate the DL. You miss him for 10 days, and you're not really missing him for as many games because you have the couple of days off this week. You know, but maybe he's not going to get any better with that. I don't know if 10 days is enough. He did not look good yesterday, and there's the concern that you're playing a little roulette with your best hitter.
No, I certainly don't think that'd be the worst idea in the world. You know, he's running very gingerly out there. You can see it's affecting him. And, I mean, you know, the history has been he plays through these things, and then it affects him. So, no, I certainly don't think it would be the worst idea in the world. But, you know, the Mets, you know, they don't tend to really put the guys on the DL like that. So, I mean, we'll see. But, no, I certainly don't think it'd be the worst thing. He clearly is affected. Now, they do have him in the lineup because, as you saw yesterday, he can obviously do what very few other guys can do in that lineup, especially at a time when nobody in the lineup outside of Asdrubal Cabrera is hitting. But, you know, you're risking a bigger injury by keeping him in the lineup.
You put a tweet out earlier about Amed Rosario, who's played exactly 81 games in the big leagues, compared him to a couple other big-time prospect shortstops that are a little more established. Rosario through 81, not looking all that well, huh?
You know, well, it's interesting. I mean, the story was not, obviously, it was not something to bash Rosario. It was an interesting, I just thought, you know, halfway through his a full season, where does he stand? And, you know, it's a very interesting thing, I think, with a young guy like him because he was so touted. I mean, top five, ESPN had him as a top-ranked prospect. So there are certain expectations. Everybody expects it. Now, at the same time, though, you know, this guy was obviously not as, you know, polished as some of the other guys. I mean, you look at Snow, he was not as offensive ready as the other guys. So when you look at it, it's a very interesting development, I think, looking at where he is because it's not there. But, you know, like as you pointed out in the story, you know, Pat Rossler said, hey, a lot of statistics he's improved. You know, he's, you know, gone up in terms of his, you know, his chase rate is down. He makes more contact. It's all that. It's just not translating. So, you know, it's very interesting to keep an eye on him because certainly the Mets want him to, you know, they need him to be an important part of the lineup. You know, this is a cornerstone player. But, you know, I've been a little surprised we haven't seen more offensively. I thought we were going to see more of an impact player by now, offensively at least. And just really, I don't think we really have not seen much above, and it's not. Like, I mean, you haven't even seen a major league average offensive player at this point.
No, you haven't. And with Reyes struggling, you really can't even entertain the thought of sending him down to Vegas. I don't know if that doesn't sound like that's even on the table with them. But this is about winning this year. And if Reyes was really playing well, and maybe you can't see that until he plays every day. I don't know how well Reyes is adjusting to the once-in-a-while off-the-bench situation. You know, you really don't know when you don't have confidence where you can say, okay, we'll put the veteran out there, give him the everyday job at short, and let Reyes get a little bit more time in AAA or more reps down there. I don't even know if that would be in his best interest. Doesn't sound like that's on the table at all with the Mets.
No, I haven't heard that. I've heard that they're not considering sending him to the minors.
So that puts it to bed. Now, this is a little fantasy baseball talk, but there was on ESPN talk about, you know, what would it take to get Manny Machado? Could you see a scenario? And I know the Mets don't have the most depth in the farm system, but knowing that the guy's going to walk at the end of the year, who knows what the Orioles would get? They don't want to maybe trade him to a division rival, the Yankees, the Red Sox, things like that. Would you see the Mets, you know, putting Rosario, you know, Peter Alonso's hitting, maybe see if one of the young pitchers as the summer goes on develops, making a rental like that?
No.
I know it's so early,
no,
but
because it's
fun talk, I guess.
No, because it's a rental. Yeah. Mets wouldn't do that for a rental. I can't. Unless you were going to sign the guy, unless you know you're going to sign the guy long term, I could not see the Mets doing that.
You don't see the Mets investing or giving up. They would have to give up depth for a rental. That's a fair point.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Matty Alt of the Record joining us here, talking a little bit here on the day off. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but Dave Island made some comments earlier about the rotation. Downplayed some of the struggles a little bit, pointed out, you know, with Jason Vargas, numbers out of there, it's not nearly as bad. Overall, the staff has an ERA a little over 4, bullpen under 4. You take Vargas out, the rotation looks a little bit better. But even, and it was interesting, he talked about, and maybe this is more about the headline than really the meat and potatoes of the comment, he talked about Noah Syndergaard being still very young, only in the league a couple of years, and the term overhype came up, the word overhype came up. It's interesting because Island's a straight shooter, and you wonder, is this a way for him to use the media maybe to send a message or to kind of level some of the hype or expectations that seems to follow these guys? And sometimes nothing ever looks good when everybody's comparing you to being Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer or the next great thing. Maybe you just have to be Noah Syndergaard at that point.
No, certainly. But, you know, I mean, it is – I think the point he was more trying to make with that – and obviously I did not speak to him. I was not the one he gave the comment to. But, you know, when you do look at it, you know, Syndergaard has only completed one full season in the major leagues, right? So, you know, he had a half season in 15, essentially. He had a full year then last year. So, you know, it is something – I think this point was more along the lines of, like, hey, let the guy – complete a full season in the majors, and then you go from there. Like, I think it was, you know, like, at this point, he's really only completed one season. So, you know, people are expecting him, you know, what's the way that you emerge? You have to do it repeatedly. And it's not a knock on Syndergaard because he's young, but he's only done it for one season. So that is more of what I took as, you know, what he was trying to get at. You know, and hey, you know, Island is a – you know, he's a tough love guy. So, you know, that's something, that's kind of the way he operates.
I know you're probably tired of talking about Matt Harvey, but, you know, one last thing here, you know, it's the first time I've been on since the deal. Mesoraco is a similar situation as Harvey, underachieving, formerly hype prospect. Obviously Harvey goes out, throws 4 scoreless innings in LA. I didn't watch all the game, but you read a little bit about it, watched some highlights. It looks like it's a similar contact type of process that he's employing. You know, Mesoraco's an interesting guy. I don't think he's going to solve the catching problem, but he's certainly an upgrade. And I'm not sure if you watched at all the game in L.A. or highlights of the game, I should say. You're covering the Mets. You know, I'm not really sure anything has changed with Harvey. It's really your problem for my problem type of trade. I would look at it that way.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's basically one of those things where it's like, hey, you know, they have a guy who is underperforming. The other team has an area of need, and they're basically both hoping they'll upgrade. The Mets are looking, thinking they might get a starting catcher out of the deal. The Reds are looking at it and saying, hey, we can get more for Matt Harvey possibly at the trade deadline than we will for Devin Mesoraco.
So 8-game homestand, I mean, you really feel this team needs to kick it into gear? I mean, look, no one's going to lose, for the most part, a playoff spot in May. And with 2 wild cards, you could probably mess around for up to maybe 80, 81 games. You know, the Minnesota Twins were out of it 1 week last year, and then they're buying the next week. You know, what do you need to see out of the Mets the next couple of weeks? Is it a matter of a certain record, kicking into gear, certain things? Like, what do you think needs to happen here? Are you putting a little sense of urgency maybe now that, you know, we're into almost a month of bad play at this point?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you kind of need to see them score. I think you need to see the offense wake up. You know, the pitching has been better. I think you need to see them hit the ball, you know, a little bit better here than they have been. Because, I mean, ultimately, I think the pitching is going to be fine, but they're going to have to prove that they can score some runs.
Matt, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it. We'll catch up soon, okay?
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That's Matt Eholt of The Record. Always enjoy catching up with him, kind of giving you some of his thoughts on what I had to say. Hey, we'll take a quick break. When we return, we'll wrap up. We'll have final thoughts right after this.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. Mesmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Mesmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get Metsmerized today.
Final thoughts here, and appreciate Matt Eholt coming on the program. Always enjoy taking a couple of minutes with him. Interesting on like the kind of the fantasy baseball type of conversation, and that was, you know, what would it take to get Manny Machado? You heard me bring that up to Matt, and I didn't really talk about it too much in the open, but the Orioles are out of it. They have him as a free agent. He's going to expect a pretty big deal. And you know, Machado's a guy, I mean, look, he's just playing shortstop, could play third so far this year, and he didn't have a great year last year. He had 259, he had 33 homers and 95 RBIs, but you know, his on-base percentage was 310. He was slightly above actually league average last year playing third base. Moved to shortstop, which he hasn't played a ton of. I mean, he's been basically pushed over to third base throughout most of his career since he came up when he was 19 years old in 2012. Now he's at shortstop full-time. I mean, here's a guy that's already got 13 home runs, 38 RBIs. He's got an OPS over 1,000, an OPS plus of 196. Where, you know, that's, you know, you're approaching Barry Bonds territory over there, more than that, you know, A-Rod territory, things like that. And he's finally showing the potential that he's always had. He's always been a really good player, but he had the knee injuries, and now he's a free agent. So you say to yourself, do you roll the dice as the year goes on and go for it? And you're not at that point right now. And you heard what Matt Eholt said. It's probably against Sandy Alderson's nature. But a move like that would fall more into ownership saying, hey, go out and do it. And do you take Rosario and Peter Alonso, who is going to start to get on some radars there? He's hitting a ton of home runs down in Binghamton. And you got Justin Dunn and Peterson. I mean, they got some arms that may not be – you know, Baseball America, you know, top 10. But, you know, you don't know. You don't know what these prospect ranking lists. You just don't know. Rosario was ranked in some lists last year as the top prospect in all of baseball. And he's certainly not playing like it right now. You would probably take Gleyber Torres right now over Rosario. So it's some interesting talk radio debate. But I would say this. Depending on how the season goes and how close the Mets are, and I know you guys are going to think I'm crazy, I always play for the now instead of the future. I always play for the now instead of the future. And if it means giving up, because eventually this window is this window, and when it closes, you're going to have to rebuild anyway. So if it comes down to it where even if you don't think you could sign him, and odds are who knows what kind of contract he wants, and we all know about the Mets and finances, and they'd have to compete with a bunch of teams, and it wouldn't be like Mike Piazza when Mike Piazza signed during that exclusive window and wanted to be here. But you never know. You never know how he takes this. I would do it. I would absolutely say, okay, look at my farm system. Who do you want? You're not going to give up Syndergaard and DeGrom and guys. They're going to want young players. I don't know if the Mets have the kind of young players the Orioles want. But I know Peter Alonso is interesting. I know they have a couple of young arms in Justin Dunn, and they had the draft pick from last year, Peterson. They've got Rosario, who's in the big leagues. You know, Don Smith is still there if you want. I don't know what they think of him. Certainly, I don't think he would be as prized as Alonso right now, because Alonso seems to be moving up on the Mets charts. I don't know what their scouts think. But to me, at this point, you're about winning right now. I would go for it. I'm not saying the Mets would do that. I would go for it. I would bring in. That's the kind of offensive player that would energize this team. Similar to, I think, that what Piazza did in 1998 with a team that kind of was in the same boat. They were struggling to score. And they were in that same 500 muck for a while. And Piazza came in and did it. Now, I don't think the Orioles are ready to dump him now like the Dodgers dumped Piazza. That was a unique situation with ownership. And it was a unique situation that the Marlins were at the way station and flipped them real quick. So you don't have similar apples to apples here, but certainly in my opinion, I'd give it a shot. I would see what the Orioles wanted, and I would go for it. I'm all about going for it. You guys, a lot of you guys want to be about 5 years from now, rebuild this, go for it now. Put your chips to the center of the table, and if it blows up in your face, you got to rebuild anyway. So what the heck? So, you know, interesting stuff. Something that we brought out with Matt Ehalt. So, anyway, I want to thank Matt Ehalt. Of course, you could check him out on Twitter at Matt Ehalt. Check out his great work over at The Record. I want to thank all of you good folks over at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you could get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Of course, over at our friends, The Grueling Truth, which are part of the iHeart Media Network. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back next weekend, regular time. Till then, be well.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.